20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Happy Saturday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. We've got a great show for you today. It's an interesting show, one that has really never been done here on the Pack-A-Day Podcast before, at least nothing exactly like it. We'll get to that more in just a moment. Before we get there, some big news from Friday. Jaden Reed designated to return off of injured reserve. A huge boost for Green Bay. Not this weekend. He's not going to play on Sunday against Minnesota. I think it's rather unlikely that he will play Thursday against Detroit. But the following Sunday against Chicago, I think is probably right in the crosshairs of when Jaden Reed is looking to return. Maybe not impossible Thursday on Thanksgiving, but there's not really any practices between now and the Thanksgiving game. I have a hard time believing they're going to open up his window for one day and then have him basically not practice at all up until Thursday's game with the Lions and then just play. That probably doesn't seem like the most ideal scenario. So the most likely is that he plays the following Sunday at home against the Chicago Bears. Either way, just seeing Jaden Reed out there practicing is huge for the Packers and is a real boost eventually for that wide receiver room that could really use his run after the catch and playmaking ability, especially out of the slot and especially now that Tucker Kraft is done for the season. Meanwhile, we did get the final injury report as well. Out for Green Bay this week, the aforementioned Jaden Reed, as well as Nate Hobbs. He is a no-go again this week. Doubtful, and this is the big news here as well, Quay Walker. So unlikely to play this week for Quay Walker, which means Isaiah McDuffie goes into that full-time nickel role alongside of Edgerrin Cooper. He'll have the, you know, the green dot. He'll be the one calling the plays, etc. That's a big time role now for Isaiah McDuffie, who quietly has had a pretty nice season. I do think the last few weeks it's taken maybe a little bit of a step down, but I thought early on he was playing really, really good football, and hopefully that continues this week when they need him most in a full-time role against Minnesota. That also means Tyron Hopper will take his spot in the base defense roles and likely play around 10 to 18 maybe snaps in this game. So we'll keep an eye on that for Tyron Hopper and Isaiah McDuffie, but likely no Quay Walker in this game. Also questionable for Green Bay, Dontavian Wicks and Savion Williams at wide receiver. Savion did not practice on Friday, usually not a great sign. I'm assuming Wicks will be able to go. We heard from Matt LaFleur that LVN is planning on playing this week, so that's huge news for him and this defensive front. Carl Brooks is questionable. He did finally practice on Friday. That's a potential good sign. We'll see if he's able to go. Josh Jacobs practiced for a second consecutive day. I'm at the point now where I'd almost be surprised if he didn't play in this game. I think the bigger question is going to be what type of, you know, sort of snap count and load is he going to be able to carry in this game? And then Matthew Golden, also questionable. He's been limited all week. I think that's a really interesting one. If he does play, I think you're probably looking at a snap count situation for Golden as well. For the Vikings, a much easier and simpler injury report. Jonathan Grenard, their star defensive end, and Ryan Kelly, their starting center, are both questionable for this game, although Ryan Kelly was a full participant all week, and Jonathan Grenard was limited but did practice the past couple days. So Minnesota could be very, very healthy going into this game, and if both Ryan Kelly and Jonathan Grenard are good to go, they're going to be locked and loaded and trying everything they can to win this game, which really feels like an elimination game for Minnesota. They lose this one, and it's going to feel like they are extremely behind the eight ball, so a little bit of a desperation game for Minnesota. All right, let's get into our main topic and our main show today, and that is a conversation with a Twitter handle and a Twitter account called Titletown Talks. There's an interesting backstory here. So the Twitter account is at Titletown Talks. It's got about 3,000 to 4,000 followers on Twitter. This is an account that, in my opinion, has been extremely negative about the Green Bay Packers towards myself and towards other people covering the media, covering the Packers, I should say, at times calling them frauds, amongst other things. This is an account that I had blocked a while back, just because I believe, I don't remember the exact reason, but I believe due to the overall, what I can kind of consider negativity of the account. This is an account that has been very upset about Matt LaFleur, the way that Matt LaFleur has coached the team, and very upset about the picture that circulated of myself and, you know, Cheesehead TV and some other Packers media members, Tom Grassi, etc., that you can see on your screen right now, that was with Matt LaFleur We'll talk about that event in great detail. This is an account that had a Twitter beef with Aaron Nagler, Cheesehead TV, amongst others. As I mentioned, I did block this account long ago. I kind of tried to avoid it. Recently had more beef with Cheesehead TV, Corey Behnke, Aaron Nagler, kind of going back and forth a little bit with it. And I really, my gut feel, everything in my body was like, call out this account. Just tell people to like, stay away from this account, whatever. I decided instead to tweet this out. I said, quote, Titletown Talks, you seem to be mad at everything Packers related, everywhere, all the time, all at once. I promise you fandom doesn't need to be like this. It can actually be fun. How about you come to a pod with me? We'll chat through it. And I'll even tell you the full story of our wild night with Coach at Corey Behnke's house. And you can get everything off your chest about us fraudulent people who cover the team. I'll have a beer. We did not have a beer. That's on me. You can bring drink of your choice and we can solve the world's problems. How does that sound? So why did I do this? I am somebody who believes ultimately that sports and the Packers in general are supposed to be fun. There's way too much fighting, especially amongst Packers fans. It's one thing to beef with a Bears fan or Vikings fan, maybe something like that. Even that, I would hope that people can recognize with our collaboration with the Paul Farrington show that that can be fun too. One of my best friends is a Bears fan. I love those type of conversations, but I feel like sometimes we're so quick to argue and judge and throw each other under the bus, especially again, when we're talking about our own team. Titletown Talks is a Packers fan account. We have very different ways about doing things. I don't see eye to eye with a lot of the ways that they cover the team, but Titletown Talks is not on his own. There's a lot of people who feel a very similar way towards Packers media, myself, Matt LaFleur, amongst others, and are very frustrated, angry, and upset with maybe how the season has gone, with maybe how the team is being covered, etc. And one of the things, and I talk about this with Titletown Talks as well, that I strive for is to have a variety of opinions on this show, not just mine. Everyone is open, you know, to their say. And again, we have Vikings fans on this show. We have national, you know, like Carmen Vitale people on this show. We've got a lot of Packers fans that are on the show as well. I think Paul Bredel does such a great job as a beat reporter covering the team. We have him on and get kind of his perspective on it. I try to get a wide variety of different opinions. And because there is a lot of people that are maybe feeling the way that Titletown Talks is feeling, and because he is upset, I wanted him to have the opportunity to voice his voice and his opinion and maybe be the voice of people that, you know, maybe we don't hear from as often. And the other aspect of that is I just thought that, all right, I could call this account out and we can have this gap widen of Packers accounts that don't like each other or whatever, or maybe we can just talk Packers for an hour and a half and maybe we'll come closer together. Maybe he'll see some things my way. Maybe I'll see some things his way and we'll all be better for it. That was my goal. I think we had a really constructive and fun conversation. That's why I did it. He accepted. We spent about 75 minutes talking about the ins and outs of my covering of the team, my role, what I can do better, Matt LaFleur, the future of the team, how the differentiators between media, how I get paid. We go through a variety of different topics. So this is a unique one. Like I said, I don't think anything like this has ever really been done before, at least not here on Pack a Day. But I do think it was educational. I think it was informative, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. Now, Titletown Talks did request that he not be shown on camera, and he requested that we did not reveal his name. So I respected that. I did request kindly or for him to reconsider, because quite frankly, I think it's a better experience, especially for the YouTube channel. If you're listening on audio, doesn't matter all that much at all. But from a YouTube experience, I think it's better if both people are shown. I mean, certainly I think it brings a better level of credibility if you're willing to put your face and name to the account and what you're talking about. But that was his decision. And I stuck by it and I certainly granted him that opportunity. And again, I more wanted to have that conversation. So it was important for him, for me, for him to come on and have that conversation one way or the other. And if he wanted to remain anonymous, then he will remain anonymous. And that's his call to decide when he wants to reveal himself to the world, I guess. As I mentioned, I did really enjoy this conversation. I think he did a really nice job. I think he had some fair and, you know, unique questions, but I think fair questions. And we'll get into all of it. I hope you enjoy the conversation. I know I did. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Titletown Talks. All right, we're being joined now by Titletown Talks. We're going to have an interesting/fun discussion on all things Green Bay Packers. Titleton Talks and maybe myself have maybe a different way of looking at stuff Green Bay Packers wise. So I'm excited to get into this. One of the things that we always set out to do here at Packaday is to try to involve everybody's voice and give everybody an opportunity. And everyone's going to have a little bit of a different viewpoint, and figured today maybe we could get together, talk some Green Bay Packers and have some fun. So Titleton Talks, my friend, how are you doing?
No, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks so much for being here. What I want to start off by doing is, you know, as I kind of mentioned, we're all Packers fans. And I think kind of one of the fun parts about this is we all have our own journey. I think everyone has kind of a different way of fandom, and they all have a different way of kind of coming up to that fandom. And I think that that way that they became a fan kind of shapes their outlook and perspective. So if you have the opportunity or have the ability to, I'd love to kind of have you share how you became a Packers fan and how you kind of started talking about the Green Bay Packers more, maybe on social media and whatnot.
Yeah, sure. So I'm from Southern California. Not too crazy of a story, really. So pretty much I grew up without a father figure. My dad wasn't really around in my life. And my uncle actually has been a Green Bay Packer fan pretty much his entire life. And I think I viewed him as my like father figure growing up, sure. You know, not having that in my life. And he would watch the Green Bay Packers play like weekly, and I think we had like a really good bonding time just watching the Packers play, and those are some memories I was really fond over. So before I even really started taking this team like too serious, I remember just spending that time, you know, watching the Packers play on Sunday with them. And eventually, once I got more interest into football overall, it became something that I really enjoyed and that I really loved, and something that became really crucial and part of my life that I kind of carried everywhere. Like I was the kid in high school, showing up with like a cheese head on my head and all that type of stuff, you know? So right. I've loved this team for a long time. Sorry, what was your last question?
How did you decide to, you know, kind of start covering the team and talking about it on social media more and things like that?
Well, I talk about football pretty much all the time. My friends and I, we love football, but you know, in Southern California, there's more Raiders fans. You know, Rams are over here, but you'd be surprised in how low their fan base actually is. So I was like, I talk football all the time anyway. Why don't I just start a social media page and just start posting? Probably, I figured it probably won't go anywhere. But at the end of the day, I'm doing this all day anyway. Why not give it a shot?
Love it. That part of the story is very similar for you and I. For those who don't know, for myself, I grew up I grew up in Green Bay, Wisconsin, about 15 minutes-ish from Lambeau Field. My parents had season tickets. First game I was at was the Brett Favre, Kittrick Taylor touchdown where Favre came in for Mikowski, basically baptized in the green and gold from there on out. And then, you know, I kind of got done with college. I wanted to be a teacher. Didn't really work out that way because moved to Madison. And, you know, from there, just started working my way up kind of the corporate ladder. And on the side, I just decided I kind of wanted to talk about the Packers because kind of like you was talking about the Packers all the time to everyone who wanted to listen anyway. So started a blog, then it became a podcast and became, you know, all this sort of stuff and started writing for Cheesehead TV and so on and so forth. Eventually, you know, just became from this really cool hobby into, you know, kind of covering the team full time and just completely out of nowhere. So very similar in that regard of just a passion for it, started talking about it, and the rest was kind of history. So like I said, we very much have that in common. What team did you kind of come up watching? Are we talking Brett? Are we talking Aaron? Like what version of the team did you kind of grow up watching?
So I'm 24 years old. So I basically grew up during the entire kind of Rodgers era. That was when I started.
Gotcha. Awesome. Yeah. It's fun to hear everyone's background in history and story because everyone's kind of got a different entry point and everyone's got a different reason. And I think, you know, again, it's cool for me going to the stands and my dad, you know, holding me up over his head to see the touchdown in the end zone to Kittrick Taylor. Again, like from that point forward, it's as good as it gets from a Packers standpoint. I said I was basically baptized in it, you know, and for you to come up in the Rodgers era and to see everything like that, again, we've been very blessed as Packers fans overall. So obviously one of the reasons that I wanted to talk today is because I know yourself and some of your followers, maybe not the hugest Packaday fans and or maybe the way that I cover the team and or the way that other media members cover the team. You know, there's just to give a little bit of more background here. you know, I think that you're not alone in that feel. There's obviously the popular picture of some people in the Packers media sphere that were having a drink with Matt LaFleur. We'll talk about that, I'm sure, as well. But I wanted to give you the floor and the opportunity to either voice any frustrations or ask any questions or go in any direction that you want. I will apologize because, and we'll get to obviously your, I have some questions that I want to ask you as well. And then we'll kind of talk about Packers Vikings and get some predictions for the rest of the season and things like that as well. I want to apologize because usually when I have a guest on, I kind of make them the star of the show and ask them all the questions and everything like that. But I know you've asked your, you know, kind of followers and, you know, so I want to kind of give you the floor and I'll let you ask any question or again, go in any direction that you want. And then we'll kind of go from there. Does that sound all right?
Yeah, sounds perfect.
All right, cool. So I'll, the floor is yours, my friend.
All right. So I think the first question that I'd have for you is a pretty popular one. I got it pretty often. And actually, this kind of correlates to what I'm going to ask overall, because let me just ask the question. So the number one question I actually got from anybody who wanted me to come on here and ask is, why do you block everyone that disagrees with you?
It's a good question. It's not true. I do block a good chunk of people. It's not as much. A lot of the people that I block or like a lot of the blocks on my list are like literally like the spam accounts and things like that. So if you see my total block numbers, that's the vast majority of them. I do block a decent amount of people though. So I saw somebody else that followed up on one of your questions as well, basically asking, does he not realize that the more followers he has, the more money and views he gets and things like that. As I kind of said in my story earlier, I did this for fun. This was always about fun for me. This wasn't about, I didn't go to journalism school. I didn't go to any sort of sports, you know, science school, anything like that, right? I just talked about the Packers because I wanted to talk about the Packers. I apologize to some of my listeners who have heard this story before, but one of my biggest passions was not only the Packers, but was soccer and coaching soccer. And I coached my sister's soccer team. And it was the greatest, my favorite thing was to coach. And by age 20, I got a head JV coaching job with a high school nearby and an assistant varsity coaching job. And I'm like, oh my God, this is the most insane thing ever. I am getting to do my absolute dream and now I'm getting paid for it. This is freaking awesome. Like this is the freaking dream. I'm 20 years old. I'm already doing kind of what I want to be doing and imagine where I can go from here. And I got paid to do the job and all of a sudden it became a job and I had to do certain things at certain times and it was no longer as fun as I wanted it to be. And I almost to the point where like, I didn't want to do it anymore. And when I started covering the Packers, even though it was just for fun to begin with, the Packers have been sort of my constant, my big thing throughout the entirety of my life. And so one of the big things that I really, really wanted to be cognizant of is like, if this ever becomes not fun, if this ever isn't enjoyable, like I just have to stop because I want to be able to turn on a Packers game every Sunday, Monday, Thursday, whenever, and just enjoy the Packers and not have this dread of like, oh my God, I've got to, you know, do a podcast or I've got to write about so-and-so player or whatever the case may be. So I've been very cognizant. I've been very lucky in the fact that no matter what I've done covering the Packers, it's been a joy for me. However, there are certain people online that for me sort of try to suck that joy away. And it's not that they disagree, it's how they disagree. There's never been anyone that has come up to me and said, Andy, I disagree with your take on Edgerrin Cooper, but hey, I want to see if you would maybe think of it this way or anything like that. It's, oh my God, you're such a freaking moron. What are you possibly thinking? You really think that Edgerrin Cooper is this? And so it's that sort of tone and it's that sort of version of disagreement or the over-the-top like attacking of me personally, that to me, that drains the fun out of it. I'm in covering sports and I am in sports and love talking about sports. And it's my passion because we have such a weirdo world that we live in on a day-to-day basis that there's all the crap going on in real life right now that when I turn on a game or get to talk about Packers, I want it to be fun and interesting and entertaining. And that part of it to me sucks it away. So that's the biggest thing is it's never that you disagree. It's sort of how you disagree. It doesn't even have to be a disagreement. If I just see, I've seen people agree with me that have been huge, for lack of a better term, dicks to other people. And I don't want anything to do with that either. And then the other thing I will add just on top of it is I'm forgive me if I'm wrong. You're probably somewhere around, like, I want to say maybe 5 or 6,000 followers on Twitter. Maybe it's more now, 8, 9, something like that. Is that right?
No, I'm less. I'm at 3.4.
Okay, so 3.4.
Yeah, I've been getting a lot more engagement than my followers actually is. So I mean,
sure, no, which is great. One of the things that I quickly recognized is, like, you have 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, 10,000 followers on Twitter, and maybe one out of every so many people is rude or unkind or whatever, and it's not a big deal. That 1 to 3 to 5, whatever percent people that is, it's really easy to ignore. It's not a big deal. You get to 80,000 people and you have a percentage of that are rude or articulating, you know, for my own mental health, if I'm being totally honest. Like, it would be if I'm walking down the street and somebody says, "You're an effing idiot. I'm going to try to get away from that person kind of as quickly as I don't want to have a conversation with that person. And I follow social media kind of the same way of, like, are you engaging? Like, we can have an engaging conversation about any disagreement about the Packers. Like, that's fun to me. I'm happy to have those conversations. To me, it's all about how you go about doing it. And again, for my own sanity and just being able to continue to do this, I block rather quickly because of that, because I just don't want to go down that pathway. So that's the long and short of it. So sorry for the long-winded answer.
No worries. I think that's a perfectly fair answer. Being a small account at this point, I've seen a little bit of that, and I have thick skin myself. And, you know, I've been like, damn, like some messages, some comments, even I've been there like, damn. That's a good one. I've never thought about that. That's pretty creative, you know, with the insults that they throw my way. But, you know, doing this, I can relate a lot to what you're saying. Like, if it ever doesn't become fun to you, it's just something that you don't want to do anymore. I think I'm just having fun with it. I don't really care if it goes anywhere. If it, you know, if I have 10,000 followers or 3,000, I think having 10 people listen to me talk about the Packers and just throw my opinions out there, it's a pretty special thing, you know?
Absolutely.
I don't care how many people do it. I just love that, you know, some people do kind of like my content. So I understand that. I also understand because I did have a moment where I was seeing all those hate comments and I was like, damn. Then I just stopped caring. But I understand that you get it to a much higher scale. But I think there is some people, because this is a rebuttal that I've had a lot of my comment section. A lot of people say that you block them just for disagreeing with them. And actually, I was blocked. I was blocked, and I wasn't even really in your comment section like that ever. So I
don't have a list of the why that I blocked every single person or what. Again, what I would say is I'm very protective of it. Maybe I don't have as thick a skin. I understand that part of it is part of the gig. No question about it. Yeah, so I honestly don't know what the original reason I blocked you was. I have no clue, if I'm being totally transparent. Maybe I shouldn't have, and that's a possibility as well. I'm sure there are people that I have blocked that I also, again, maybe didn't deserve it, or maybe I misinterpreted or whatever. I think the thing for me is that, especially, like, I think the funny thing about, you know, blocking is you're not allowed to not view me or view my tweets or anything like that, or even quote tweet them. Yeah. I think maybe you can't quote tweet. I can't remember, but like,
no, you can't quote tweet them.
Yeah. Okay. So you just can't reply or quote tweet. And again, it's just, for me, there's a level of toxicity that I don't want in my social media life. And again, maybe that's not fair. Maybe I shouldn't get to decide that one way or the other. But that's just the way that I've handled it. And again, I've unblocked people in the past if I've, you know, seen whatever, if they've said, "Hey, I'm sorry if I offended," or whatever. And again, I'm not asking you to grovel over, like, "Can you please unblock me?" anything like that. But that in general, that's just been my sort of standard operating procedure.
No, I understand that. I think a lot of people sometimes are in your comment sections and they feel like they just have a disagreement or a different viewpoint, and they feel like you block them for that. You know, obviously, I'm not sure like how much you actually do that, or how many of these people at the end of the day actually say something disrespectful or rude, which, you know, I can't blame you. I can't blame you or anybody else that they're just getting a bunch of hate comments there and it's just disrespect and rude, that you just want to block it because you don't want that negativity in your life. But I think, you know, following this up to my next question, I think mm-hmm. this is you know, this is a pretty big reason. Some people feel like you guys block them because you have a difference in opinion. And it seems like you, Cheesehead TV, you know, some of these other creators that have larger followings, it seems like you guys are very consistent, just hyper defending the Packers. It feels like sometimes like you guys don't get as critical as you should. And a lot of people feel like you guys just share that mutual feeling. So I was gonna ask you about the picture that you guys took.
Yes. All right. But I wanna comment on that other part. So in case I get away from that, let's talk about that shared, you know, sort of people who cover the Packers tend to defend the team more sort of thing. I want to get to that eventually. But let's talk about the photo first. So here's the 1,000,000,000% true and mostly boring story of the Matt LaFleur photo. So the first thing that I think, and if I'll put it up on the screen too for people who are watching, so they if you're not familiar with said photo, you can know exactly what it is. That is a get together that Corey Behnke and Aaron Nagler host at Corey Behnke's house when Aaron's in town for training camp every single year. And that is for mostly like Packers media, bloggers. They invite a lot of people. Some people show up, some people don't. The usual people that are there are Rob Domofsky, Pete Doherty, myself, Aaron Nagler, Corey Behnke, Perry Goldstein's been there in the past, Paul Bredel, Camille Davis has been there in the past. Wayne Larrivee's been there, I think, the last couple of years. You can see him in the picture. Tom Grassi was there this past year. I think he's been in there in the past as well. Just a variety of different people who cover the Packers in a variety of different ways. This was like the fifth or sixth year, I want to say, that at least I've been to it. They may have been hosting it prior to that. Maybe it's the fourth year. But that's like the fourth year that I think I've been to it, somewhere in that range. There's never, ever been anybody from the other than, sorry, Wes Hodkiewicz is usually there as well. Other than Wes Hodkiewicz and I guess Wayne Larrivee too, there's never been anybody from the Packers organization that has ever been there before. On that particular day, I was standing at training camp with Aaron Nagler prior to the get together that evening. And he just reminded me of it. And he kind of like was joking. He's like, just so you know, we invited Coach. And he, which would have been correct 99.9% of the time, correctly, or in this case, I guess, incorrectly assumed, he's like, yeah, but there's no way in hell like Coach is actually showing up. But just want to let you know, we actually invited him. And I'm like, he's like, we've invited, you know, other people within the organization in the past. Nobody's ever showed up. So we're having our normal evening, like every other evening in the 4 or 5 years before that we've done this. And everyone's just having a good time, exchanging stories, etc. And obviously having some drinks as well. And we're probably about 2.5 hours into this thing, maybe. And all of a sudden, knock at the door, and lo and behold, Matt LaFleur and a member of PR are at the door. And Matt, you know, brought a bottle of wine, as one would do at the, you know, to a guest event. And he did have an old fashioned first. I will tell people that. Yeah, so I know I see people. Oh, he had a glass. Yeah. No, he had an old. He had the Corey old fashioned. He got the experience. And that he stayed for probably about an hour. It was very quick, and nobody knew, at least maybe Aaron or Corey eventually got wind that he was going to be there. Nobody that actually myself, like Tom Grassi, Rob Domofsky, anybody else knew that he was going to be there. Of that hour that he was about the only time that the conversations, I should say, were like my son and his son are in the same age of basketball. We both have sixth grade boys that are in the same basketball league. We talked about basketball. That was actually, by the way, so obviously I get to ask him questions in press conferences. That was the very first time I ever personally got to introduce myself to Matt LaFleur. And that was the very last time I have ever had any communication with Matt LaFleur outside of, again, a press conference where I'm asking him questions in the press conference. I think that's the same for almost everyone in that room now. Obviously, Rob Domofsky and Pete Doherty, they're there every day covering the beat. They have different I don't know what their connections are. I don't know what their, you know, if they have any, you know, sort of connection with Matters, agent. I have no idea. But nobody there was there to you know, brown nose or to pick up extra credit with Matt LaFleur or anything like that. Matt was great. Again, he talked a lot about basketball. The big thing that we talked about is with my son in basketball was specifically My son plays basketball and soccer, and we talked about how these coaches just want their kid to play one sport. And he's like, listen, all of these players that are in the NFL all play multiple sports. Every trainer, everyone will tell you play as many sports as you can. That was our big conversation. And then right before he left there, again, he was probably there for about an hour, maybe at most, right before he left. I'm like, I'm probably never going to get the opportunity to ask this again, but I'm like, what is it that people covering the Packers most get wrong? That was the one Packers question that I had. What do we get wrong more often? Like that makes it hard for your job or whatever. And it was kind of a lame answer, if I'm being honest. He's just said like, well, you know, you guys obviously get to cover it from afar and see it on TV or, you know, from this, you know, the press box or whatever. He's like, when you're down in the field and the bullets are flying, it's like, you've got to make, he's like, there's everything going on around you. There's all these decisions you have to be made and everything like that. He's like, it's not, you know, you don't get the benefit of hindsight, which I'm like, well, yeah, I know that already. But that was the only Packers conversation that was had the entire night. And he was just kind and, you know, stayed an hour. And then that was it. He left. PR drove him wherever. I think they drove him home. And that was the end of it. And then the rest of us stayed and, you know, probably for a couple extra hours and hung out and talked Packers and whatnot. So that was the gist of it. I know there's people that are like, well, the conflict of interest. The first thing is, again, I will say nobody, I don't even think Aaron and Corey knew that. I knew that he was invited. I don't think anybody knew he was actually coming to that. And certainly not, again, the guys, the real media guys like Domofsky and Doherty and things like that. They had no idea he was even going to be there. The second thing I will say is that I didn't think of it at the time, maybe because I was about, you know, five beers in at that time. I didn't think of it of like, oh, this is maybe not like a, you know, an ideal, like, you know, picture to have. I honestly don't think it really matters. And again, it was the entire thing was so nondescript. And so like, if any outsider was there watching it and be like, oh, I wonder what they're saying. It would have, if you're like, oh, I wish it could have been a fly in the wall, it'd have been like, oh, I got to hear, you know, Paul Bredel talk about golf and Andy talk about his sixth grade son in basketball. And it would have been really boring for a lot of people. So that's what was kind of taking place. And if I had to guess, I have not talked to anybody about this. I bet, again, the sort of what I would consider like the true journalist probably didn't love that the optics and or the picture and whatnot. But I can tell you from being there, it was as nondescript and as whatever of a night as you could possibly imagine. And, you know, Matt, like I said, left after about an hour, had his old fashioned. That was about it. And yeah, that's it. So I understand the optics of it. I understand of like how it looks like we're all in cahoots and planning together and figuring out how we can defend Matt and, you know, putting our hands in the middle and be like, all right, Matt on three. Just not true. Just it's just a fun night. I had a blast. I had a blast talking to everyone like I do every single year. And it just so happened that the head coach of the Green Bay Packers was there. And he, you know, we talked some basketball. We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, the weather might be changing, but the feeling of being right never, ever, ever gets old. So keep the season rolling on Prize Picks by getting $50 in lineups instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. Now, it's time to start getting ready for Week 12 as Green Bay takes on Minnesota to try and get some momentum in the NFC North. This needs to be a big win for Green Bay, and I'm going with Micah Parsons to terrorize the Minnesota offense. Elsewhere in Week 12, I'm going with big games from Jonathan Taylor, Breece Hall, and Drake May. Here's the best part. Prize Picks is super simple. Just pick more or less on at least two player stats. If you get your picks right, you could cash in. And even better, how you play is completely up to you. If you want flexibility, choose Flex Play, where you can get paid even if one of your picks misses. And if you want the biggest payouts, go for the power play. No matter how you play, Prize Picks is a great way to put your takes to the test. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And don't forget that code PACKADAY, Prize Picks. It's good to be right. Hey friends, I've got some great news for you. I've got part of your holiday shopping already taken care of. I am absolutely obsessed with my new Ridge wallet, and it's going to make an absolutely perfect holiday gift for just about everyone in your life. It's also a perfect gift suggestion for yourself as well. I'll be honest, I was just about done with wallets. I suffer from back pain, which doesn't help. Plus, they are clunky to carry around, and I just don't even like having a wallet with me. That was until I discovered Ridge. Ridge is known for their unique, slim, and modern wallets. And Ridge has been perfecting the wallet for 12 years, and their new Ridge 2.0 is 10% lighter. Plus, they have over 50 colors and styles to choose from, including every NFL, MLB, or college team. And I just know that Packers one is already calling out to you. Now, Ridge is over 100,000 five-star reviews, and with their Ridge Tracker card, you'll always know exactly where it is before panic mode kicks in. And right now, for a limited time, Ridge is having their huge holiday sale. Head to RIDGE.com to get 47% off your order. This is by far the biggest discount they've given all year. That's RIDGE.com, Ridge.com, for up to 47% off your order during their biggest sale of the year. And after you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them Packaday sent you.
So you don't feel like Matt LaFleur being there, just spending time with all you guys, which is something that he wouldn't normally do, pretty much with anybody, right? You don't feel like that did anything for you, even like without you noticing in the back of your head, like, I'm sorry. One second.
No, go for it.
So you don't think that like psychologically sticks in your head, like, wow, Matt LaFleur is hanging out with me. So you don't think you're less critical on him just because of it?
I can 1,000,000,000% understand the optics of that. A billion percent. No question about it. Listen, if I had a relationship with Matt, or if I'm like, you know, was like to the point of defending him or whatever like that, I would have Matt on the show. I would have him on the pod. I would love to have Matt on the podcast and chat with him on the podcast. I don't have any of that relationship. And I think a lot of people, again, whether it's because I've blocked them or whatever, a lot of people have maybe checked out. I defended Matt quite aggressively early this season when they were 5-1-1 and people were calling for him to be fired at 5-1-1. At 5-3-1, if anybody, you know, dared to tune in the last couple of weeks, and as my listeners would tell you, I've been extremely critical of Matt. And even this week, after the win against the Giants, critical, I asked Perry this week, I said, hey, I loved the situations that Matt put the Packers in this game. I thought offensively, from a play calling standpoint, he consistently put the team, same thing with Jeff Hafley on defense, in positions to be successful. I said, I question wholeheartedly after seeing, you know, the same mistakes now in week 11 of, you know, what is it, sixth, seventh year of coaching the team, of we're seeing these same mistakes. Is he the coach that can get this team to stop making those same mistakes? And I think it's a very fair question to ask. And I will promise you, there will come a point in time, and I'm not there yet, from like, oh, Matt needs to be fired right here and now. There will be a time where the talk needs to get louder of, hey, Matt needs, and that I will believe wholeheartedly that, all right, Matt, it's time to go. It's time and done for me, Matt. And I will have no issue whatsoever calling that out and saying, yeah, this is not good enough. I even said, obviously, this past week wasn't good enough. And I will continue to be critical of the things that I think are very fair to be critical of. Where I was over the top saying, all right, we need to settle down here, is when you're 5-1-1 for a coach that's had an incredible record throughout his career, and you're on top of the NFC North, I think at top of the NFC basically at the time, and we're calling for the coach to be fired. That's not the time or place for me, at least personally. And even now you see nationally where this is starting to get buzz, and you can go national account by national account, and they did not have an old fashioned with Matt LaFleur, and everyone to a T is saying like, this is crazy. Why are Packers fans talking about Matt LaFleur being fired as head coach? And what is this even about? So that's where I was at, but I will absolutely continue to be critical of the things that he needs to be, we should be critical of. And I'm still going to believe right now, I still think he's the best person for this job here and now. We'll see how the rest of the season is a perfect petri dish to play out. There's exceedingly high expectations for this team. You've got 5 division games left. You are on the precipice of either winning the North or being out of the playoffs entirely. And the difference between those things and what happens the rest of the year should absolutely shape pretty much everyone's viewpoint of how they view this team and how they view this coach. If they go, you know, 1-4 in these 5 division games, miss out on the playoffs, and or, you know, get in the first round and lose by 20 again or something like that, then yeah, there's a real conversation to be had. If they, you know, go on this epic run through here, all right, well then Matt proved himself as well. And I think that the rest of the season is going to be the real litmus test. And we know anyway that the Packers aren't going to fire him midseason anyway. So to me, it's more of, I think the conversation was a little bit crazy and I called that out, but there's every right for Packers fans to be frustrated with a lot of the stuff that's going on with Matt and this team this year. I just think everything goes from 0 to 100, meaning it's either Matt needs to be coach of the year or Matt needs to be fired. Like they're winning and like, oh, he's the greatest coach, he should be coach of the year. Or it's not going great and it's like, oh, fire him, get rid of him, immediately move on. And that stuff is the stuff to me that quite frankly, always just like, can we just breathe and step back a bit and let this play out? And we're going to get our answer by the end of the year as to whether or not this coach is the right coach for the team or not.
I don't think it's as drastic as he's either coach of the year or he needs to be fired. I think people were just reading between the lines and like seeing how the course of the season was going. I think the Lions win, it was very impressive. I think that kind of had us all over the moon thinking, okay, we might actually be legit Super Bowl contenders. But almost every single win after that, we saw some big red flags. So I think his biggest issue right now is just being so conservative. We're running the ball again at a top five rate. I feel like Jacobs has been kind of inefficient this year because I think if I'm correct, he's running it at below league average right now, rushing per attempt.
Yeah. He's for all of his yards are after contact. So he's mostly doing fine, but the line in front of him is doing a very poor job. And yes, in totality, yes, they're below average true. Running football.
Yeah. I think I saw that he's getting hit before he even passes the line of scrimmage at a career high rate as well. But it's just too conservative at this point. Even the Giants game, it felt like he was more committed to establishing the run at one point than just letting Jordan Love air it out. And he's a $200 million quarterback. Like, it should not be this conservative. It should not take all this for him to start going for a different approach. And I really told myself it was the Philly game. The Philly game, I was convinced. I was like, all right, he's been criticized. This is the game that he's going to open it up a lot more. That did not happen. So I don't think it needs to be so Matt LaFleur is the greatest coach or Matt LaFleur needs to be fired. I think people just want to see him stop playing scared. My perfect example would be the Dallas game. I feel like that version of Matt LaFleur that came out coaching that game was on a mission. And I don't know if it was the underdog mentality. I don't know if when he has expectations, if he plays more scared, more conservative or what it is. But when we went into Dallas, I have to say, that was one of the greatest playoff wins I've ever seen as a Packers fan. Nobody was giving us a chance. Nobody was giving us a chance. But, you know, LaFleur came out confident. He even said that we're going to go down swinging. And that was some of the best play calling I think I've ever seen. I think we want that version of Matt LaFleur. We want him to run up that score. We don't want him to be scared to run up that score. I feel like he's scared to run up that score sometimes. Like, I don't know what it is, but I think he wants to win by controlling the clock, being conservative, and just getting out of there. Like, we want a convincing win as Packers fans. We want to sit back and really think to ourselves, yeah, this team's legit. This team can make it all the way. Because even, yeah, sure, I'll give it to the team. Had we caught those like three or four interceptions, it would be a lot closer of a game than it actually was. But still, 27-20 is pretty unacceptable, I would say.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything that you said whatsoever. I think if you're going to have little quips of scared money, don't make money and all gas, no brake, well, it would be nice if we saw that mentality of the team. I've said a lot of the same things. I don't think this team is playing the right brand of football for their DNA. And Aaron Nagler said something similar of like, stop coaching the team that you want and start coaching the team that you have. And you have a quarterback that wants to throw down the field. You have receivers that can win down the field. You've got a pass protecting offensive line for the most part. You don't have a run blocking offensive line yet. It seems like they're hell bent on trying to establish a run. Some of it's understandable because they're trying to get better looks for their passing attack, but you're not getting them. So you're going to have to figure out a different way to attack, which is possible, by the way, to attack down the field without having that running attack that you would ideally like. And I think we saw a little bit more of it in this Giants game, but I still think you have to have a little bit more of that mentality that, again, he's preached in the past, all gas, no brakes, scared money, don't make money, et cetera. We haven't seen a ton of that. And I think we obviously, it's fair to ask to see the brand of football that we think that they are capable of, and at least maybe seeing a signature win where they can actually maybe win by a couple scores.
So I consider myself a fan first account. I think I'm fan centered. That's the approach that I always want to go. I care about what the fans have to say. I care about what the people have to say. So just one thing that I wanted to leave it here with was, you know, this picture that you guys took. I just wanted to say, I feel like if I was a bigger account, let's say I had like 50,000 followers. Let's say I took a picture with Dontavian Wicks and I was always advocating highly like, hey, this guy needs more run. And he's dropping the ball constantly, running the wrong route constantly. I think it would be a fair criticism for people to say, hey, this guy's hanging out with Dontavian Wicks. There's got to be some type of bias right there. Even if he doesn't see it himself, there's probably some type of bias. I think that picture that you guys took just had fans, especially in a frustrated moment, look at it that way. Like, you know what? These guys are hanging out with the coach. Whatever reason, it could have been the smallest thing. It could have been the biggest thing in the world. For whatever reason, that picture was taken. And I feel like, you know, in a frustrated moment where everyone's feeling this type of way, like a lot of people are fire Matt LaFleur. And then like the other half of the fan base is, no, we got to keep him. At the end of the day, you know, it looks bad. It looks pretty bad. It looks pretty bad. And I think that's where the frustrations kind of flared. And that's where you guys get a lot of criticism towards that.
Yeah. And again, I understand. And again, in the moment, again, nobody there even expected that moment to happen. And then, the picture was not like, I know it looks kind of like posed for or whatever, but it was all of a sudden like Aaron's like, say cheese, everyone. And then we didn't even know that was going to get put up on social media. So like the whole thing like happened in an insane amount of like warp speed time. And the interesting thing that you say, and I totally agree with your sentiment of it. One of the reasons, and I think what's important to kind of know of how I cover the team, I don't know if you know this, I grade every player on every single play and I break down the tape and I do everything. I've actually gone out of my way. I don't do a lot of locker room stuff. I don't have connections. I don't have sources. I don't have agents that I work with. I don't have coaches that I work with. I don't have a single player or coach text, DM, or contact number for anyone within the organization other than Packers PR, who I have their email because I need to, you know, talk credentials and things like that in the offseason and whatnot. I don't have a single player, coach, GM, scout, or agents that I have any connection with whatsoever. I've specifically tried to keep it that way. I had one time I had a defensive back that I was DMing with. I had wrote an article about him saying that I thought the team was utilizing him incorrectly. And he DM'd me and he was like, oh my God, like, thank you so much for writing this. You're 100% right. This is incredible. Like, I really appreciate you taking the time to do this and so on and so forth. I'm like, this is like a long time ago. And this is when I was first getting into it. I'm like, this is awesome. Like, I had this cool connection. And then like a week later, like I gave him a bad grade in a game and he blocked me. I'm like, oh, so I did the Batman of like, oh, that's how that feels. But no, like, so ever since that point, I've made it like almost to, I don't want any connections or anything because I want to be able to grade the players and I want to be able to analyze the coaches, players, et cetera, without any bias whatsoever. I don't want to have to go like, all right, well, I've got Dontavian Wicks coming up on my show on Wednesday night. So better grade him better because I don't want to give him a huge negative grade and then have him come up on my show this week or whatever the case may be. I've literally tried my damnedest to make sure that I don't have to sort of deal with that stuff. So I understand the context of it extremely well. And again, I bet there are people in that room that even when what's going on, were like, I'm kind of uncomfortable with this. I didn't. It didn't raise any flags to me at the time. It probably maybe should have. It didn't raise any flags to me at the time just because I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool. The coach of the team is there and we're all just having a good time and whatever. But yeah, I totally understand the concept of it 1,000,000%.
That's great. I think everybody just kind of wanted you guys to understand. That's all I think it really was. I mean, obviously there's some people that, you know, take things a lot further than others, but I think overall, like, because some, I don't know if it was Nagler or who else, but I think they were downplaying it and making it seem like it was nothing. And, you know, maybe it is. Maybe it really genuinely is nothing. But it's like I had talked that those perceived biases that you get, you might even get them subconsciously. Like just him going there and doing that might make you feel a little bit better about that person. Like, oh man, coach showed up. Coach showed up. Wow. Like, let's not fire him.
Absolutely. It's not nothing. There absolutely can be that unconscious bias from, you know, even knowing somebody. Again, for me, talking to him for 10 minutes about youth basketball did not change my opinion in any way, shape, or form of anything that actually happened. So I think that Okay, a couple of things. I'm in the same vein as you. I'm a Packers fan, and my biggest thing is I want this team to do well, and I want to enjoy watching them play football. And I told this story a couple of weeks ago. I was the biggest McCarthy guy. I thought he was going to lead them to a Super Bowl. I had a ton of faith in him. People in a very similar vein are like, he's never going to be able to win the big game. He's not a good enough coach. And I'm like, I really think he's good enough to win it. I was driving the McCarthy train. That the day that he got fired, when Mason Crosby missed the field goal against the Cardinals, I was at that game and I was actively rooting for Mason Crosby to miss that field goal, because I knew the team needed a change. And I just had a feeling if Mason made that field goal, and that game, I think, would have gone to overtime. And if they won that game, and all of a sudden Aaron goes on this unbelievable run of, he just, you know, RELAX style run, or run the table sort of run. And all of a sudden Mike's going to be back the next year and they're going to run it. It was just so insanely obvious that everyone just needed a change, that it needed a change of pace. And that's going to probably have everyone in this league, whether it's a coach, a player, a GM, et cetera, gets hired to eventually get fired or cut or traded or released, et cetera. And there's going to come a point in time where I feel the exact same way about Matt in all likelihood. I hope not. I hope he goes on to have a Belichickian career and has like 7 Super Bowls. That'd be great. But I want this team to be successful as well. And so we're in lockstep. I just think sometimes, you know, and again, we're all in a different form of fandom of, some people want that aggressive, hey, let's rip the band-aid. We got to do something new. And others are like, hey, let's let this breathe a little bit and let a coach that's had a lot of success in this league, maybe not the playoff success that any of us would like, but a lot of success in this league, try to figure it out. And if he can't, all right, let's have a conversation at that point. So no, I understand, again, the optics of it, but I'm in the same boat. I want this team to be extremely successful. And I'm a fan of it, and I want to see this team do whatever it takes to get to where they need to be a Super Bowl contender year in and year out.
I think there's a big difference kind of here. I do, but like, obviously we're all Packers fans at the end of the day, but also another thing that kind of factors, and I'm just pointing it out. This might be another reason that people kind of view you guys a little bit different. While we're all Packers fans, you know, we're Packers fans, and we're just talking about the team. You're getting paid for it. Cheesehead TV is getting paid for it. A lot of you guys are getting paid for it. So I feel like, you know, along with that picture of the coach and everything else, you just start looking deeply in it. And you're like, you know what? It's not completely insane to say that some of the things that they say are to bring in more views or something along those lines. Yeah. So I feel like a lot of people might see it that way.
So I think there's an interesting distinction as well. This is not a trick question by any means, but when you say we're paid for this, by whom are you thinking is paying us? Just to be clear.
I actually don't know who is paying you.
Honestly, this is one of the reasons why I think there's so much of this misconception out there. Cheesehead TV and myself at Packaday Podcast, different entities, by the way, we're like kind of sister type companies, but not actually related. I'll just speak to myself. I don't know exactly from a Cheesehead TV standpoint, but for me, how I get paid is I get paid through ad revenue and ad revenue alone. So just to be crystal clear, I don't get anything from the Green Bay Packers. I don't get anything from, when I say advertising revenue on the audio side, I'm with a network called Blue Wire, which is like, if CBS is like a TV network, Blue Wire is like a podcasting network, and they get a bunch of shows in, and then they go to, you know, different podcasting, different price or like different partners. And then they can sell to a bunch, say, hey, we've got 100 podcasts or like 1,000 podcasts, and you would get to put your advertising on all of these podcasts rather than me just trying to go and say, hey, do you want to just be on Packaday? So I'm part of a network from with Bluetooth on the audio side. And then on YouTube, I am getting paid through their YouTube partner program. And then I obviously have some connections with Habba Shabba Shortier and Luigi's Pizza, where I get some advertising revenue that I sold myself and worked with those partnerships myself on those. That is my ad revenue. So my ad revenue is completely tied on the audio side and on the video side to viewership. Now, there's two ways that you can look at that. All right, number one is, all right, so his his pay is totally based on view numbers. So if he says something that is controversial or clickbaity or whatever, he's going to get more views. You're not wrong. That is how it works. And that is how a lot of people do it. I would hope that if anyone listens to me regularly, watches me regularly, man, I stay away from as much of the clickbaits and stuff. Or honestly, sometimes I try to take the clickbait and throw it on its head and say, all right, here's what's being talked about from a clickbait standpoint. Let's break it down in great detail for real and things like that. But I just want to be clear of like, if it's not for the listeners and the viewers of what I do, I don't have a base of revenue from anything else. Bleacher Report, I have a small little thing that I do these little videos for. That's the only other thing. So just to be, you know, totally clear, there's not anybody that's paying me for my takes. It's really the audience that I generate by giving what I try to have as, genuine, authentic Packers takes. And if they are great, awesome. And people are going to come back and listen to more. And if they're not, if they're crap, people are going to stop listening and not make Pack-A-Day part of their routine anymore, which is going to eventually make it so that I don't have that ability to generate revenue. If that makes sense.
No, yeah, I understand that. I think the point of what I was just telling you with this last question and the previous questions was, I just wanted to show you the perspective that the average person on Twitter or anywhere else that consumes your content, many, many other people's contents, you know, the bigger creators, that's just kind of the perspective of how we see it. Like, oh, these guys are getting paid, coach is there. So I feel like the criticisms are valid. I feel like they are valid. Like whether, you know, whether it's true or not, or whether you clickbait or not, I feel like at the end of the day, I feel like everyone's perspective is valid on how they look at it. I don't think anything less of you or anyone else, like of the big creators, because they make money off of this. I think the only criticism that I really have is that I feel like you guys do defend Matt LaFleur a little bit too much. I feel like you guys are easier on him than he deserves.
And I think to me, and I understand the optics of it. To me, at least personally, all I can do is speak for myself. I would be, if that picture never existed, if I never met Matt in person, I would be saying the exact same things. There's been nothing that's changed. And you can argue maybe I do defend Matt too much. Again, I think I've been critical of him, especially as of late, especially over these past few weeks a little bit more. I've certainly been critical of him in the past when I felt like it's been necessary. I still think he's a really good coach. I still think he's capable of leading this team. But I think there are cracks in the foundation right now. And if they don't get those corrected, I do think it's probably going to go, you know, sour before it gets better. And so I'm watching it and monitoring it extremely close. I just don't think that would have changed anything whatsoever. But again, I understand the optics of it. The other thing I just want to touch base on what I was from way, way earlier. And then I, you know, want to get to some of you. Obviously, if you have other questions, great. But I want to ask you a couple of things as well.
For sure.
One of the things that I think also goes a little bit unnoticed and that I think is really, really important to differentiate is I feel like a lot of Packers media gets thrown together in one big, you know, sort of tub together. Circle. When okay. There's a lot of different ways to cover this team. I think the first thing that needs to be recognized is, so people will say like, oh, the beat or the people that cover the Packers full time, like they're being way too generous on Matt LaFleur. I am not a beat writer. I kind of pseudo am one a little bit more in training camp, but even then, not really. A beat writer is somebody who covers the team as a reporter full-time, goes on the road when they're at the games, is covering them in their press conferences every day, goes to every single practice, et cetera, et cetera. I could do that. I have the credential to do that. I do not do that. That is not my cup of tea. That's not how I cover the team. Your beat writers are Rob Domofsky, Matt Schneidman, Pete Doherty, Ryan Wood, Jason Wilde, Bill Huber, Paul Brettel, although Bill and Paul do not go to the away games, but everything else is full beat writer. Wes Hodkiewicz, Mike Spofford. I'm probably missing a couple in there as well. Tom Silverstein, like those are the beat guys. Those are the guys that are there every single day, no matter what, covering the team in the building, etc. All right. Then you have, and those are, by the way, what I would consider unbiased. I know Rob Domofsky's not a Packers fan. I know Ryan Wood's not a Packers fan. Pete Doherty's not a Packers fan. Like those are completely unbiased reporters. Paul Breitel is a Packers fan. That's maybe slightly different, but he's covering it like a beat reporter, but there might be a small difference there. The rest of the true beat guys, Matt Schneidman's not a Packers fan. Those are unbiased true reporters covering the team in a beat reporter standpoint. You then have a variety of like what I would consider analysts, podcasters, bloggers, your Cheesehead TV's Aaron Nagler's, myself, Peter Bukowski and Locked On Packers. Some of which, like Aaron and myself, are credentialed as I'm through Packer Report credentialed. I'm not credentialed through Packaday Podcast. Aaron is credentialed through iHeartMedia. He is not credentialed through Cheesehead TV. That those are common misconceptions as well. I do not have a credential through Packaday Podcast. Same thing with Aaron through Cheesehead TV. And then, you know, Peter Bukowski, Lockdown Packers, not credentialed. And then you have like, you know, Zach Cruz, Packers Wire, Justice Mosqueda, Acme Packing Company. You have all of these sort of what I would consider like analysis sites and or reporting sites or blogs or, you know, podcasts that are covered by people like myself, but are not actually beat writers. And all of them, all of us that I just named are fans of the team. We are fans of the team. So I just want to be clear of like, there are differentiators between traditional media and non-traditional media. And if you're looking for a truly like unbiased, like, hey, I don't want somebody that's a fan of the team. I don't want somebody that's got any of that. Then Packers News, The Athletic, ESPN, like those are the ones that you're going to want to go to as your source of information. I, as a credentialed media member, try to separate church and state as best as I can, where if I'm wearing that credential, my fandom dies at the 99% dies at the door. The 1% that stays is the 1% that stays with me of like, as a fan, what would I want reporter or like the credentialed Andy Herman to ask or to find out? But all of the fandom just stops at the door and I become a professional. I become unbiased. But as soon as I'm home in front of my TV doing the podcast, et cetera, yeah, fan Andy is still there as well. So again, that's neither here nor there, but it's another misconception I see from a lot of people of everything is just grouped together into everybody covering the Packers. I'm more of like defending the beat guys here because I think a lot of times people like myself, Nagler, Bukowski, Cruz, et cetera, get like everyone views us as all the same when the beat guys are really doing a totally different service as non-fans of the team. And there is a very distinct difference between those groups of people. We'll be right back. Anybody else feeling the financial squeeze right now? Everything just feels a little bit tougher, and I, for one, don't have the time to constantly monitor my finances and see where every little dollar and cent is being allocated. Thankfully, Chime understands that every dollar counts. That's why when you set up direct deposit through Chime, you can get access to fee-free features like free overdraft coverage, getting paid up to 2 days early, and so much more. I highly encourage that you take the time to learn more over at chime.com/packaday. Not only do we use Chime as a family, but I know multiple friends who use Chime and swear by it as well. The early payments, the free overdraft coverage, and access to over 47,000 free ATMs have not only been beneficial, but have come in huge in some really difficult situations. I didn't even mention the ability to get daily balance updates and real-time transaction alerts, which have helped shape our spending habits. So work on your financial goals through Chime today. Open an account in 2 minutes at chime.com/packaday. That's chime.com/packaday. Chime feels like progress.
Chime is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. Spot me eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Timing depends on submission of payment file. Fees apply at out-of-network ATMs. Bank ranking and number of ATMs according to U.S. News and World Report 2023. Chime checking account required.
Guys, it's 2025. The days of going to the doctor for emergencies are over. No more waiting until walking it off for 6 months doesn't work or your fingers are numb from texting, "I'm fine." It's time to take our health more seriously and get things checked out when we need to. That's where ZocDoc comes in. ZocDoc makes it easier than ever by helping to find the right doctor quickly and easily. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high-quality, in-network doctors and click to instantly book an appointment. You can filter for doctors who take your insurance, are located nearby, and are highly rated by verified patients. Appointments made through ZocDoc happen fast, typically within just 24 to 72 hours of booking, and more often than not, you can even get same-day appointments. I've already had family members who have used ZocDoc and loved it, and I'll absolutely be utilizing it on all my appointments from here on out. So stop putting off those doctor's appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/packaday to find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/packaday. Again, ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/packaday.
I think it's valid because, I mean, I myself have done that a fair amount of times. Like, I kind of, when I talk about the Cheesehead TV, I'm like, oh, Cheesehead TV, Andy Herman, etc. I have grouped you guys together a lot in my criticism and stuff, and I think a lot of people do as well. I think the biggest reason for that is probably because there's a sentiment that you guys share a similar feeling or kind of cover them in a similar way. Like, it's very positive, you know, pro-Packers all the time, and I feel like nobody... That's, I would say, the bigger guys. I consider you the bigger guys because you guys have the biggest platforms right now. It seems like there's not enough criticism. I know the criticism has ramped up lately. Like, I have been seeing more stuff from you, from Cheesehead TV, and you guys have been getting more critical as of lately. But that wasn't there when they were 5-1. And I feel like there was plenty of criticism that deserved to be thrown Matt's way at 5-1. The Cowboys shouldn't have been a tied game. It looks really bad as we go on when you watch these lesser teams just kind of either dominate the Cowboys or lose
for sure
the game against the Saints. It just looks worse and worse. And we're sitting here at 5-1. A lot of the fans are being very critical week to week on either coaching situations or players that are playing. And it feels like that's downplayed by a record. Like, the rebuttal is, we're 5-1. We're a great team. We're 5-2. We're a great team. It feels like it needs to get to the worst case scenario for there to finally be some decent criticism on this team or coaching staff or players. And that's where people get frustrated.
Yeah. And I can only speak for myself, but to me, just what we've seen throughout the season. And I agree. I don't think Cleveland, Dallas, certainly those games have not aged well. The way that the Dallas game ended was brutal. The way that they did not, you know, have a really cohesive attack against Cleveland. For a team that's, for the most part, again, had success under Matt, and is at 5-1-1 at the time. And yeah, having their fair share of struggles, rightfully so. People had every right to be frustrated with those struggles. I don't have any issue with that take on it whatsoever. I think the level of, like, Matt needs to be fired at that point, that's where I fought back and said, that's absurd. There, you had every right to be frustrated. The other thing is that, like, even right now, as I look at it, and again, I don't think Green Bay is where they need to be. I think this is a disappointing effort so far from this Green Bay Packers team. And that starts with Matt. Like, no two ways around it. That starts and ends with Matt. If you look around the league, every team has at least one win and every team has at least two losses. It's what have you done in the other 7 to 8 games that you've played? Green Bay's 5-1-1 in those other 7 games that they've played, besides the one win and two losses that literally every team in the league has. Everyone has a frustrating loss. Everyone's got a simple win. And then again, you've got, again, every team with two losses at this point. That's not to absolve any of the issues that have taken place with this Packers team, but it's just to say, this has been one of those years where you can't take anything for granted. Good teams have lost to bad teams, and we're about to find out which teams separate them at the end. We both sat through a Super Bowl run with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback where that team started 8-6 on the season. And at that point where Mike was in his you know, career, like, it, using the same thing, we would have been like, fire Mike. What are we doing here? Why? He's clearly not a Super Bowl coach. And they went on to win, I think, 19 games or something at that point, including winning a Super Bowl. You don't know when that next thing's going to happen. And to me, that the conversation of firing Matt at that point in time still, to me, rings absurd, while also understanding that there is true criticism to be had and he should not be immune to that criticism.
So I'll ask you, I know we got more stuff to talk about. So I'll ask you two more quick questions that we can carry on. So this is a personal one. Like, I know I said that I would get like a lot of people's comments on here, but you know, we've been on here for a while. What do you think about my account, how I cover the Packers, and similar accounts that cover the Packers?
What would you consider a similar account? Let me ask you that first.
I would say anyone that's more hypercritical of the team.
I haven't taken like a full inventory. I've seen some of your stuff recently. I think there was I forget, there was some stuff. Was it Edrian Cooper that you just pointed out playing really good football? I think there was on there.
I think I did.
And then there was something else too, that you did, like a film break. Yeah, there's a film breakdown too that you did. Yeah, absolutely. Like, I love that stuff. I think that there's absolutely a space for that. And I think that there is a ton of oxygen for that. As far as like the hypercritical stuff, there's certainly, and again, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on is because there absolutely is a lot of oxygen for that right now. There's a lot of fans that are feeling the exact same way that you are feeling and the way that you are covering the team. I think, and again, the difference here, honestly, might be 20 years of fandom. Winning football is really freaking hard. And expectations and meeting those expectations and just expecting, hey, you got Preston Smith, so it's now Super Bowl time. It doesn't quite work like that. And for me, I've said this before. The funny thing is I always try to stay as even keel as possible. If this team was 10-0 right now, 11-0, whatever, and I saw some of these exact same flaws that were happening, there would be a lot of people that would be telling me right now, Andy, you are far too negative. This team's 11-0. And I would be pointing out, yeah, they just had 7 drops this past week. Yeah, they just had, 4 dropped interceptions on defense. They had a play where 2 wide receivers ran into each other, a tight end and a running back ran into each other on the same play. And then Jordan Love still found a way to get it to Romeo Doubs, and Romeo Doubs dropped the pass. Like, this offensive line is nowhere near playing good enough. If this team was 11-0, I would be the one that's like, hey, pointing out some of the stuff that's going on because it's realistic, and saying, you need to be focusing in on this. This is not a team that right now is capable of winning a Super Bowl, despite the fact that they're 11-0, and everyone else would be like, but yeah, but they're 11-0. Ah. And at the same time of like, if this team was, I'm not going to put it the other way, because if this team was like 3-7, I'd probably be on the bandwagon too of being like, yep, nuke it all. Get it the hell out of here. We need to try something different, or at least it would be much closer to that. But I try not to ride the wave too much, because we are so locked in the week to week. And I'm totally missing your question, which I'll get back to, I promise. But we're so ingrained in the week to week of what just happened. And like, even this week, I feel like there's more forgiveness for the Packers for their 27-20 win. I've even been accused of being too negative about a win this week, when I didn't think that was a good performance at all from Green Bay this past week. So I just try to step away and say, where is this team at overall? I don't think they're good enough overall right now. I think they're destined to be probably a 1 or 2 and done playoff team, if I'm being totally transparent about it, which is going to suck and it's going to be really disappointing. But I think there's an oxygen for what you're doing. It's not my particular brand of vodka, just as maybe yours isn't some of the stuff that I do, but that doesn't make it bad or different. And again, one of the main reasons I wanted to have it on is because we're just Packers fans that all want to see this team succeed. And we just have different viewpoints on how the front office and management should go about attacking it, which, by the way, doesn't matter, because even if I think that they shouldn't fire Matt, they might fire Matt anyway. And even if you think they should fire Matt, they might not fire Matt anyway. So to me, it's all fun conversation. And I appreciate a lot of the stuff that you are doing.
No, thanks. I respect that. I just wanted to know because, just the curiosity of what, the bigger accounts think of people who are a little bit more hypercritical. I think my next question would be, obviously, making a move 2 first rounders for a player such as Micah Parsons comes with immediate expectations.
Yep.
That like this team's trying to win a Super Bowl. We're trying to win now. Yep. The window's open probably for the next, let's say, 4 or 5 years, realistically, because then we're going to get some salary cap issues after that, likely. Matt LaFleur had a Hall of Fame quarterback, Aaron Rodgers, and he had a Hall of Fame wide receiver in Davante Adams. He couldn't get it done with 2 of the best players in NFL history. What makes you think that he's going to take this team to the Super Bowl?
Yeah, right now, I don't think he's going to take his team to the Super Bowl is probably my most honest answer. I think they have a very large hurdle. I think the NFC is very, very difficult, and I don't think the particular brand of football they're playing is good enough to make a 3 or 4 game win streak through to win a Super Bowl. I'm not saying they can't get there by any means, but certainly if I'm betting on it, I don't think that they can, or at least not the way they're playing right now. My overall answer to that would be, I think a lot of people point to, well, you had Bakhtiari and Lindsley and Adams and Rodgers, et cetera. Like you had this team in 2019 and 2020, maybe even 2021, that was so good. And look, like Matt was a benefactor or a beneficiary of having all those players. And there's a level of truth to that. I don't think Matt, and again, if you want to really go back to the photo and me, you know, just defending Matt no matter what, I don't think Matt gets enough credit for where that team was right before. That team was floundering. Rodgers was not playing good football right before Matt got to Green Bay. And Matt came in, and I thought he did a tremendous job of getting buy-in from a quarterback who is not easy to get buy-in from, met him halfway, let Aaron still run a lot of his stuff while trying to put in his own kind of offense as a very first-time head coach, never being a head coach anywhere before, and coming in and getting, you know, really good play in 19. They overachieve. They go to an NFC championship game. And then in 2020 and 2021, you know, really get Aaron again playing at an MVP level in back-to-back seasons, which again, before that and after that, after Matt, you know, after he's been away from Matt, now he's older, whatever, but that has not been the Rodgers that is we have seen. So I think Matt deserves a lot of credit for what he did with those teams, but he fell short, and it's going to be something that sticks with him for the entirety of his coaching career, where every fan, and maybe rightfully so, has the right to ask and question, can Matt win the big game? Can he get them to a Super Bowl? And the ultimate answer to your question is, until he proves that he wins a Super Bowl, that's going to hang over him forever. I mean, it's still hanging over Dan Marino. Dan Marino is one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, and he still lives to this day with like, yep, never won the big one though. So yeah, it will carry with him forever until he wins the Super Bowl. And if he doesn't, that will stick with him forever as well. So right now, I don't think this team has the what it takes to go on that run. Do I think Matt could eventually get this team there? I do, but I think they're going to have to put a lot more into the attention to details if this team wants to get where they want to go.
So how long is the leash? How long are we supposed to just wait here and just, you know, hope and pray that Matt LaFleur all of a sudden gets it together? He's had a while. He's had a long time. And yeah, like, sure. Like, I agree with you. He does deserve credit. I don't think it was all Rodgers. Yeah, Rodgers is great. But yeah, we saw him during the Michael Carter era. It was starting to fall apart. So I do give credit to Matt. And honestly, this is the first year I've genuinely sat down and been this critical over him. Ironically, it's the first year that I'm actually, you know, putting out content at all. So, you know, it might seem like I've always hated Matt. It's not the case. I've always thought he was a legit coach. I thought he should have won some Coach of the Years, or at least one, you know, in his tenure. But how long is the leash? How long are we just supposed to sit here and say, you know what, Matt could win it?
That is entirely up to the eye of the beholder, which is going to be different for everyone, which again is the cool thing, the cool aspect of this. To me, and kind of as I mentioned earlier, the rest of the season's a great litmus test for where this team is at. If this team doesn't make the playoffs and any sort of signs of the locker room are gone, or that they have not responded to his coaching, it is a very fair question to say, do they need to go in a different direction to get a new chef in the kitchen to try to get this going in a different direction? If they are one and done in the playoffs, I think he's back, but at least I can understand the question a little bit more of like, hey, does he have what it takes to get this particular team to play at the level that they need to play at? That's where I'm at. And hopefully they just go on a big win streak and do great. And then it's a non-factor and it's a non-question. He's going to be back. If just putting it in Ed Policy's plate for a moment, I think the only thing that would get them to move on from Matt would be a big losing streak, not making the playoffs and losing the locker room. I think if that happens, it's a no-brainer. He's gone. I think, again, just missing the playoffs, but the locker room loves him, or going one and done in the playoffs and the locker room loves him. My guess is he's back, but he gets a 1-year lame ass extension that doesn't actually mean anything. And he's coaching for his job next year would be my guess. And then I think any NFC championship appearance or beyond that, it's just, he's unequivocally back for better or worse. As far as for each fan and what they want. Yeah. If you want him gone, then, you know, you're starting, I don't know if you want to cheer against your team, but you're going to probably probably need some losses, and you're probably going to need something to go catastrophically wrong. Cause I don't think anything outside of the scenarios I just mentioned are where he's going to lose his job. And then I think, but either way, barring a Super Bowl win this year, I think it gets really interesting as to what that extension looks like and what sort of seat he's on next year. Because if he doesn't get it done this year, and if he, certainly if he falls like one and done in the playoffs, or maybe they win a cheapy wild card game but get blown away in the divisional game and they're clearly not close, I think all eyes, fans, front office, everyone are going to be dead set on Matt LaFleur and of like, this is it. 2026 is the year. Go out and win it, or there are potentially going to be problems. So, but I think, again, that's up to each fan to decide for themselves of where they're at in the Matt LaFleur experience.
Oh, yeah. You know, I respectfully have to disagree. I feel like if he goes one and done in the playoffs, I feel like that should be enough, because I feel like, well, obviously they added a seventh seed. The seventh seed has been around for the last couple of years. Had that seventh seed not been added, the Packers would have missed the playoffs both years. Then I feel like a lot of people would be singing a different tune than they are now. I feel like that seventh seed has covered a lot of it.
It's a very fair point. Yeah, I hadn't thought of it that way. It's a very fair point. And yeah, again, if it's one and done in the playoffs, depending on how that goes, depending on what led up to this, you know, if they go like undefeated between now and the playoffs and then go one and done, that has a different connotation than crawling into the seventh seed, barely getting in with a win over a Minnesota team that has nothing to play for in the final week of the season, and then losing by 20 to whatever playoff team. Again, that there's almost differences there as well. So, you know, there's a difference between if they're healthy and if, like, you know, they're down five premier starters as well. So I'm intrigued by it. But again, I'll go back to saying what I said before. I think we're going to learn a crap ton about the mettle of this team and about this coach in the next, you know, whatever, 7-8 regular season games and the hopefully the playoff games that follow that.
Well, those are it for my questions. I want to give you the opportunity, obviously, because you said you had questions for me as well.
Yeah, we ended up covering a lot of it just kind of throughout the course of the show. I don't want to keep you too much longer, but a couple things. And I think one of the cool questions that I wanted to ask you is, let's flip positions for a moment. You're in my shoes. Or maybe the better way to ask it is, how would you like to see me cover the team differently? We'll be right back.
You know what? How I would like to see you cover the team differently is, I feel like there's nobody out there really letting all the fan voices just kind of express their opinion. And going back to, you know, one of the biggest things that they asked me in the comment section is, why does Andy block everybody that disagrees with him? I feel like that opposite opinion that a lot of people have just wants to be voiced more and like heard more and kind of validated. So I'm not sure if it's something that you do on your podcast, but you know, I encourage any big creator to not just try to diminish what everybody's saying, you know, just because that they have a hypercritical view or because they're being really critical. I feel like it's fair to let everybody say what they have to say, whether it's positive or negative. And I feel like what a lot of people do, like the bigger creators, is I feel like, because I remember you made a comment. You made a comment and it kind of stuck with me. You said, we don't need an Ike 2.0. And I looked at it, and ironically, you know, shout out to Ike, but they actually went into my comment section and they said, keep doing what you're doing, which was very positive. And, you know, think what you think of Ike. I appreciate, you know, that little words of encouragement, because I know that I'm kind of doing the opposite, you know, of what a lot of people want to hear or what they think is good content. Which is fair, because, you know, I'm really just putting my opinions out there. That's all I'm doing. I'm not trying to be anybody. I'm not trying to be, you know, I'm not trying to rage bait or anything. But I feel like when you do have that opposite opinion, a lot of people say you're Ike 2.0. And a lot of times you're not trying to be Ike 2.0, because, you know, while Ike does put out a lot of rage bait, and I got to say, like, you know, they do. I feel like they do put out some stuff that's pretty critical and objective. And I'm like, you know what? That's not bad. That's not bad. But, you know, a lot of people are putting this account down or other accounts like this down because they don't think it's good content or it doesn't fit their narrative. So I feel like if anything that you could do better, or, you know, anyone can do better that has a platform, because I wouldn't consider my platform very big, let the fans voice their opinions respectfully, whether they have a disagreement or not.
Yep. No, I don't disagree with anything that you just said. In the fact that I do think, again, the cool thing is, I think everyone does have a voice. One of the things that I try to do, kind of as I mentioned earlier, is I have a bunch of different people on through the course of the week, national, you know, local people that are, you know, covering the team on a full-time basis, like a Paul Bredel. It's, you know, kind of a more of a beat guy. And then, you know, obviously guys like Justice Mosqueda, Carmen Vitale, et cetera. But hopefully me bringing you on and having you have some time to kind of be, if you want to consider it the voice of the voiceless, or just maybe a voice of a minority of the fans, or however you want to view it, just know, I think that there is room for fandom in any way that anybody wants to fan. Where the only thing that turns me off, and I talked about it earlier with the block thing and things like that, is the either the constant negativity where there's nothing that the Packers can ever do good enough that's going to reach the expectation or reach the level of like, oh yeah, they did a good job. Or again, when it becomes personal attacks and things like that, where again, part of that comes with the gig, I understand it, but at some point it's just like, I don't need to hear that on a day-to-day basis. Other than that, to me, everything is fair game. And I say this a lot. There is a lot that I'm going to get wrong in what I'm doing. There's been a lot that I've been wrong about before. There's going to be a lot that I'm wrong about again. I am not the gatekeeper or be-all end-all of all Packers takes. And I think the more opportunity that people have to voice what's going on, that's going to make all of us as Packers fans a little bit smarter and a little bit better. Even if we disagree, when we disagree, it then has the ability to either poke holes in some of the things that we think we believe. And then we can go back and question, hey, should I be believing in that thing in the first place? Or it has the ability to strengthen my belief and being like, hey, yeah, you know, even after going through this and hearing the other point of view, I'm even more strengthened in the fact that I believe this or believe that or whatever. Doesn't make it right or wrong, but I think it's good conjecture. It's good conversation. And the number one thing, just to maybe end with this too, is what I really don't want is I don't want to tell you that you should believe that Matt LaFleur should be the head coach of this team and that Matt LaFleur is great. I want to lay out what I think, and here's what I believe, and then here's maybe the opposite view of that. And then you as the fan get to decide if I'm full of crap, if you don't want to believe what I have to say, or if you're like, yeah, he's making some good points, or just to see both sides of it. And then you go do what you want. If you still want Matt fired, by all means, go for it. Go have fun. If you're like, yeah, maybe Andy was right, maybe Matt shouldn't be, maybe he's doing a good job. Awesome. Great. Doesn't mean he's not going to get fired in the next couple of months, depending on what happens from here on out anyway. So I appreciate you coming on, and I appreciate you, you know, seeing or providing that different viewpoint. And I think there is a ton of value in that.
No, yeah. That's what I wanted to just bring out on the show, you know?
I appreciate that. I had a couple other things here. I don't know if we didn't get to any of these. Let's see here. I think those were the questions that I had for you, but just really quick before we get out of here, I know we've been here for a while, but Packers Vikings, what are you looking forward to this weekend? And what is your prediction for the rest of the season?
Packers Vikings. I have a hard time imagining that we lose that game. It's at home, correct? Is that game at
home? Yep.
Yeah. That game's at home. JJ McCarthy hasn't looked very great. He just threw a bunch of interceptions. It would be hard to really see the Vikings walking to Lambeau, especially what I do feel like that pressure is on Matt right now. So I feel like what I want to see this game is I want to see Jordan Love throw that ball more. And I think we might not have Jacobs. So by default, I think we're going to have to approach the game differently either way. I was liking a lot of what I was seeing in the Giants game. It seemed like they were opening up the playbook a lot more. It seems like they were throwing a lot more. Obviously, the drops got to get cleaned up. That's pretty bad. You never want to have that many drops per game. So I just want to see the ball. I want to see less of. I feel like the split is like 60% runs. I want to see the run rate go down to like maybe like 40, 45%. It doesn't even have to be that way. I think some games just call for more passing and other games call for more running. But I feel like every single game has been a carbon copy of the other this year, where you're just watching, you know, we're running the ball 100 times a game. And, you know, you could argue that Josh Jacobs got hurt like that too. You're running him into the ground in a way. You don't have, yeah. I mean, Emmanuel Wilson's solid. He's pretty solid. We don't know what Marshawn Lloyd is. Fortunately, he's had those injuries. So hopefully we get him back soon. But you nice. Are overusing. You're overusing Josh Jacobs. You got to give him a break. You can't just rely on him to go out there and have a 1,000 touchdowns, you know, like every single week. I think he's been one of the three running backs, or one of the two, something like that, that they're scoring like every single week. So I want to see a lot less Josh Jacobs usage, and that's not a diss to him at all. I just feel like we don't want to run him into a wall. And I feel like we drafted so many receivers. We have like 8 viable wide receivers on this team. Like, there's no reason that Matthew Golden should be getting 2 targets, 3 targets a game. There's just no reason to have all these weapons and not use them. So I want to see that utilized more. And, you know, any win in a divisional win is accepted. We'll take whatever we have. But if we can go out there and we can have a convincing win against the Vikings, that would put the sentiment a lot higher than it currently is. Rest of season, I do feel like we end up with a good record. I feel like we win the majority. Hopefully, I'm not just being optimistic and it's an actual thing that, you know, comes to fruition. But I think we win the majority of our games remaining. But I can't say that I see this team as a Super Bowl contender. And it sucks to say that, because it feels like we wasted a year of contention in a way. But I don't see this team winning a Super Bowl. I would be happy if this team made a deep run, whether that's the divisional or the championship game. I would be really happy with that. But I just can't imagine. And even losing Tucker Kraft. Tucker Kraft was a huge loss. So, you know, you're just seeing that in the corners. You can be as critical both ways. You can say the corners are doing great. You can say the corners aren't good enough. I would struggle to imagine that Keyshawn Nixon being our CB2 or CB1, wherever you want to slot him. I have a hard time imagining that we're going to get to the Super Bowl with Keyshawn Nixon eventually shutting down whatever elite wide receiver that we have to play in the playoffs.
I hope you're wrong, but as we talked about earlier, I don't necessarily disagree that I think this team is just a little bit off right now, but they've got the rest of the season to try to get it together. And hopefully that starts this week in Minnesota. Should be a fun game. Hopefully they can pull out a win. I don't necessarily disagree with the Jacobs thing, especially when they've got a game on Thursday against the Lions right after that on a short turnaround. I think you're going to have to, you know, try to spare him a little bit so you're not running him into the ground if he does play in this game, and make sure that he's ready for Detroit as well. But one game at a time. Try to get this win against Minnesota first, and, you know, maybe they can start stacking some success, putting some wins together, and this team will surprise us in the playoffs and moving forward. Either way, should be fun to follow the rest of the year. Anything else that obviously I want to get to, you know, anything you want to plug, but anything else that you want to get to before we get out of here?
I think I'm good. I think I said a lot of the things that I really had to say.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to do this. It's been a ton of fun, and I think it's been very educational. Where can we find your work, and anything you want to plug on the way out?
Well, you can find me on Titletown Talks pretty much anywhere. I only post right now on Twitter. I've had some TikToks. I really just started this thing, so just seeing where I go. But that's, you can find me anywhere on Titletown Talks. Just look up Titletown Talks anywhere if you're seeing this.
All right, follow him on social media at Titletown Talks. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. That's going to do it for us today. Again, a huge thank you for coming on and then talking through some of these things. We'll see you guys all very soon. But until next time.
Can I say one more thing? Can I say one more thing?
Go for it. Go for it.
My fault. You know, I saw a lot of people looking forward to me coming on this show because, I don't know, they probably thought that I wasn't going to do it, or that I was just going to come on here and be like rude or disrespectful. You know, my intention is not that. And I want to clarify that I am not trying to be disrespectful. I'm not trying to rattle anybody. No. I just hop on social media and I give what I feel or what I'm seeing from my perspective. I always want to be 100% authentic to what I do and, you know, what I'm saying. And my goal isn't to blow up. I don't care if I end up getting like 100K or 200K, or even if I capped out already, like at 3,000 followers. I really just am on here having fun. And, you know, if you like some of the stuff that I say, then I appreciate it. I appreciate to everyone who's followed me, you know, to thus far. But, you know, I want to cast light. I'm not this negative, like, rage baiter. I'm not trying to antagonize anybody. You know, I'm just a fan at the end of the day, like, that loves this team. And, you know, us as fans, we go through a lot more stuff than, like, people give us credit. They say, yeah, it's just the game. It is true. It is just the game. But a lot of us go back and, you know, our friends are making fun of us, or a lot of us get emotional. I know people who cry after games. To this day, I can't go look at the highlights of the 2014 NFC Championship. You know,
there's highlights in that game.
That's what I'm saying. I can't go look at that. It's emotional. It means a lot to us. It means a lot to me, just like it means a lot to you. And I am a fan of this team. I do care about this team. I just might be a little bit more critical than others. If that's not your cup of tea, I 1000% understand. I think there's so many creators on here that do a great job. You know, whether you want to consume what I give is completely up to you. And if you don't, that's okay. But I steer you in the direction of whoever you want to go listen, talk Packers. I want to, you know, give a shout out to a lot of accounts kind of in the similar range as me, like BGPG. I think Relaxed does a great job. HCM is pretty funny. I think we all know Lime Volcano. If you know, you know. But, you know, like everyone who does it, I encourage anybody and everybody who wants to talk about the Packers to do it, because at the end of the day, we're all just fans wanting the best for our team. And, you know, maybe you give a better perspective than me, or a better perspective than Andy. Like, maybe someone will find your stuff like very unique or something along those lines. But I feel like we always can have more people coming on here and, you know, giving their perspective. And I think that's fun. That's the fun of it. I'm just having fun. I just want to have fun with it. So, you know, if you like my stuff, I appreciate you. And like I said already, to all my followers that have followed me to this point, anyone that's engaged with me, I appreciate you. Like, every single one of you has meant so much to me.
We're in the same boat. Again, it's the Packers. We all love it. We're all passionate about it. And again, we all might have a slightly different take on it, but at the end of the day, it's fun. It's exciting. It's entertainment. It's drama. And we all love talking about it, engaging in it. And I appreciate you taking some time to engage with us today. Again, follow him at Titletown Talks. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.